Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for our shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, civil rights attorney and reporter Arsalan Iftikhar, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey.
Yo.
Great.
All right, Arsalan, we don't want you to have like a Petraeus moment where you kind of pass out, man. But you know, let's just get right to it. All right,
NBA fatigue, baby.
Yeah. The LA Lakers are NBA champions yet again. They beat the longtime arch rival Boston Celtics 83-79 in a winner take all game. Michelle,
I really don't want to reveal too much about Arsalan's state here, but he's still wearing his green pants, but his eyes are a little red. That's all I want to say. All right, it was a tight game. There's no shame in that. I mean, how can you be ashamed when you go to game? When you go to game seven, but I'll just play the final seconds. Arsalan, you can cover your ears if you need to.
All right.
Drop it.
Rondo looking, gets it to Pierce. Pierce turns, back out. Rondo fakes, dribbles, puts up the three. Won't go. Rebound to Saul. Kicks it out to Odom. Odom throws it ahead. The Lakers repeat back-to-back titles. The LA Lakers, the 2010 NBA champions.
Oh, man. Thanks, Michelle. So, Pablo, you're the sports dude here. So going into yesterday's Game 7, sports nuts were talking about legacies were on the line, especially for Kobe. What did this win mean for him?
You know what? The best way to explain this is, for me, was by following Marcus Jordan, which is Michael Jordan's son, Twitter account last night. He tweeted that no one should compare Kobe Bryant to what his dad did. And though Kobe Bryant won last night, I have to agree with young Jordan. Kobe Bryant had a great, series. He averaged 28 points a game. You know, obviously won another championship, won more than Shaquille O'Neal, as Shaq also pointed out last night in another Twitter posting. But the gulf between Michael Jordan and the next best player still remains wider than the gulf between the best player in any other sport and the second best. There really is no debate in my mind that Michael Jordan remains the ultimate. And Kobe Bryant, a top 10 player maybe, but not Michael Jordan.
Wow. A-Train, do you concur? I mean, through your tears?
Well, let's not forget that, nobody really ever gave the Boston Celtics any chance of getting to the NBA Finals. You know, a lot of analysts picked them to be upset by the Miami Heat in the first round. We shocked the NBA nation when we beat LeBron James in Cleveland. We spanked Orlando in the Eastern Conference Finals. And we took the Lakers to the last 11 seconds of Game 7. And let's also not forget one
of the more impressive after that drubbing in Game 1. I mean,
yeah.
I have to give you props, Arsalan, because I was writing them off after Game 1 because that was a blowout.
Well,
so I give him props.
I predicted Celtics Lakers here in the barbershop, and,
that.
And, let's also not forget that our center, Kendrick Perkins, was out for Game 7. And, the big rebounding disparity was really, really the difference in the game.
This is something I meant to ask you all along. Why are you a Celtics fan? You're from Chicago.
That's a good question. Also wondering that, Arsalan.
Inquiring minds want to know.
It's like he's grandfathered in because he comes in here with these green pants every week. So, but I forgot to ask. Why are you a Celtics fan?
What?
Unspeakable. Asked.
Since the age of four, I just loved Larry Bird. And have just been a Boston Celtics fan ever since.
Okay. All right. You know what, Pablo? The big question. Big question coming out of the West Coast. Will Phil Jackson return? Even the owner Jerry Buss, Kobe, they got their doubts. What do you think?
Logically, Phil Jackson doesn't really have anything else to prove. I mean, Red Auerbach's record is out there, obviously. He's within shouting distance of that. He has been. But really, he's going to go down as, again, even if you tie Red Auerbach, I think people are not going to automatically consider him the best ever, Phil Jackson, that is. So for me, I don't really see any reason to come back. But someone pointed out a great bit of symmetry to me last night, which is that Phil Jackson wins all of his titles in three-peats, or has been, at least on the road to doing that now. So maybe he comes back next year, gets that third in a trio, makes it another championship. But for me, I don't think the guy really has anything else to prove. I mean, we know who he is. Another championship isn't going to do that much in my mind.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's real zen, so I mean, maybe he'll meditate on it. And
but that's one of the things I think people maybe other people agree with this. It's kind of a love it or hate it thing about Phil Jackson, because the fact that he's so zen is what some people love about the guy. Because, you know, is he curing cancer out here? No, excuse me, mm-hmm. It's basketball. On the other hand, I think it's the kind of thing that makes people crazy, like that. Oh, LA, they think
well, he does
all
it really
it
well.
All.
I mean, he does it really well, and I think that the same thing goes for Kobe Bryant. Independent of how you feel about the Lakers, and you can sort of love and hate on them, just like people love and hate on the Yankees and anybody else who's sort of dominant in their game. But you got to appreciate the talent behind people like Kobe, and the fact that Phil Jackson knows how to coach a basketball team, and that's that you can get beyond that and just appreciate somebody who does their job well, and he certainly does it at another level. It's also telling that people have to go back to compare Kobe Bryant to a player like Michael Jordan, an iconic figure who isn't even playing anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when George Brett was chasing 400, they're like comparing him to Ted Williams. When they start comparing you to somebody, you know, back in the day as an icon, you've already sort of won the debate. So it speaks well for Kobe Bryant that they're even making that comparison to Jordan. So.
That's true.
The R has spoken.
That is true. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barber shop with Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, Arsalan Iftikhar, and Pablo Torre. Back to you, Jimmy. Actually, I feel I have to say this. You know, there is another sporting event going on in the world.
Really?
Haters, it's called World Cup. It's only the biggest sporting event in
what is
the
this world. Of
world
which you speak?
In the
How many
world,
more days
the
till
real
football
one,
season starts?
The galaxy. Who was doing that story? Was that Ruben? Was that you?
I said no. How many more days till football season? That's
that
all.
Is
I
so,
it is football season.
Excuse me. How exciting is this? I mean, the U.S. Slovenia tying 2-2. Nobody gives. Talk about people that nobody gives a chance to. And the U.S. has actually tied England and now is tied Slovenia. I'm sorry. You got. What's wrong with you people?
No, I am totally psyched for this. And I was, you know, I was, again, a big three, you know, I never really a big hockey fan, but, you know, basketball, baseball, football was my religion. The World Cup, I mean, working in sports journalism and getting a sense of what this means to the rest of the galaxy, as you said, I mean, our sports are so relatively tiny and provincial. And it's kind of sad in that kind of existential way when you realize these are other countries flying to South Africa, going insane. And Slovenia, of course, a population with all of 2 million people, scoring a goal for each of those million against the United States and that juggernaut. But you wonder why soccer isn't going to catch on, or will it ever catch on? And again, its success in this tournament is going to be so huge for American sporting consciousness going forward.
I'm going to do my part here. I'm going to play the goal that the U.S. just scored to tie against Slovenia. Here it is.
Drop. Out the door to lay it down. Bradley has done it! USA a level! The comeback kings strike again! Michael Bradley for the USA! What a moment!
I'm just bringing out my inner sportscaster here. I've always wanted to do it. Go to the videotape. I've always wanted to do it. Thank you.
Everything
thank you for letting
is
me
cooler
have that.
When it's announced with a British accent.
That's true.
I was going to say that. Yeah, he sounds like dude from Hell's Kitchen.
I can think of one thing that isn't cool even in a British accent, and that is we are cleaning up this oil as fast as we
touché.
Can.
Touche. Well played.
Bring it
I want to offer my personal apologies to the people of the Gulf.
Nice.
No, but
I have my life back.
On the World Cup, honestly, I mean,
go ahead, A-Train.
Break out the vuvuzelas. I mean, this World Cup has been about the underdog. You know, here we have Slovenia, you know, essentially leading their group with U.S. and England. And the U.S. had to come back and tie the game with an 82nd minute goal by Michael Bradley. You had Switzerland essentially shocking the world by beating Spain 1-0. You know, I think one of the reasons, touching on what Pablo said about why soccer hasn't really done too well here in the U.S. is mainly because of a lot of people complaining about ties. You know, they don't like games ending in 1-1 ties. They don't understand the concept of the strategy behind that. But I think that this is as big, if not bigger, than the Olympics every 4 years.
And just to jump in real quick, the interesting thing to me about America and soccer has always been that all our kids play soccer. You know, every suburban family. You know, the soccer mom is an institution in America, and yet it never translates to the elite levels of athleticism. Maybe it's because of the pro leagues not having that financial incentive. You're not getting our best athletes. But Americans want to see a winner. They want to root for a winner, as nonsensical as that may be as far as the sort of aesthetics of sport goes. And again, this U.S. team has as much pressure on it as any other one in America's sporting history, because they understand that they're the ones, they're the lever that's going to push America forward or keep them sort of trailing behind the rest of the world as far as this all-important game goes.
And can I just ask briefly, Pablo, if I can ask you, what do you think of ESPN's coverage? We just got that clip from them that we played, by the way. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about that? Because, you know, when reporting on the Olympics, people always complain, well, right, it depends on what your point of view is. You know, some people complain it's too soppy and it's all about the, you know, who's, you know...
Yeah, the soft focus.
The soft focus. Right. I kind of like the soft focus, but then a lot of people complain that it's so U.S.-centric that you don't get the sense that this is an international sport.
That's a great point.
Any thoughts about that, Pablo?
ESPN has really, and impressively, they've really ramped up the coverage more than they did in 06. And in 06, when it was in Germany in the World Cup, they really, you know, again, were going for that American-centric perspective. But as we saw, as evidenced by said British accent, you know, they've hired guys who are the best announcers in the English Premier League. You know, these guys who know soccer forward and backward, grown up with the game, are legitimate and respected in the football world, not just, you know, American sports. And so they've done a great job. I mean, they've really invested a lot of money. And ESPN, as much as anybody, I think, second only to the United States national team, has as much invested in this World Cup. And they've done a very good job, I thought, as far as advertising, getting the word out, and really doing justice to the game.
Jimmy, are you watching it? Are you watching it? I have to ask.
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I'm you know, I'm watching it vicariously through my significant other. But otherwise, I am totally disengaged. But can we go ahead. I know, right? Can we go ahead and switch gears to politics? And Iowa's Republican Congressman Steve King, on Monday, he blasted the Obama administration for favoring blacks over whites. Michelle, really?
Here we go. Really? On G. Gordon, that respected journalist, not G. Gordon Liddy, on his radio program. I'll just play what he said, and you all can talk about it. Here he is.
All right.
Eric Holder said that white people in America are cowards when it comes to race. And I don't know what the basis of that is, but I'm not a coward when it comes to that, and I'm happy to talk about these things, and I think we should. But the president has demonstrated he's got a default mechanism to him that breaks down the side of race. It favors the black person. In the case of Professor Gates and Officer Crowley, that was a case where he knew nothing about it, threw himself into it, and concluded that the cop had operated on a race bias or a racist basis. And then he ended up having to have a beer summit because of that.
Let me just clarify for the record. Eric Holder, he was referring to Eric Holder, Attorney General Eric Holder's comments. Eric Holder did not say that white people are cowards.
He said Americans.
He said Americans are. That is
not
a nation. So there you go.
We're a nation
of cowards.
Thank you, Michelle. Ruben.
Yes,
now,
sir.
Is it just me? King is not really the most progressive thinker in the room. Any room. Any room,
look,
right?
Look,
you know, didn't he once say... Wait. Didn't he once say that if Obama were elected, terrorists would be celebrating in the street? You know, this guy, I don't know. So just let me get this straight. Let me get this straight. So some folks say he's doing too much for black people, and some folks say he's not doing enough for black people.
I'm glad you zeroed in on that. I mean, there's a lot of things to say. Let's do it quickly. First of all, you know, everybody needs the late night comics need their punchlines, and people like me writing columns, national columns, need to see people like King. Because they say dumb things. He said before that his solution to the immigration problem was to put up electronic fences, shock fences along the border, because that's what we do in Iowa to keep out the cattle. Mm. You know, so it was good. Okay. And then he talked about other things along the line. But you're absolutely right to point out this paradox. It wasn't just a few months ago that we were having this conversation that our friend Tavis Smiley, my old friend Tavis Smiley, and others were complaining that Barack Obama wasn't doing enough for black people in advance of a black agenda. And there was a whole debate about that. And then the congressman comes in and seems to think somehow that he's bending over – the president's bending over backward for black people. He got the Crowley thing wrong. He said that Obama had sided with Gates because of a perceived racial bias. Actually, what he said famously was that the police acted stupidly, not having anything to do with race. And lastly, when I hear comments like this, here's my thing. I think that this congressman grew up at a time where all the presidents look like him, dating back to George Washington. And he's finally had to deal with, like a lot of Americans, the idea of a black president. And there's a learning curve that goes attached to that. And when I hear comments like this, I don't learn a lot about Barack Obama, but I learn a lot about the people who are saying it. And what I've learned about this particular congressman is he has this this racial hang-up that he's demonstrated again and again. The world is changing much too fast for Stephen King. You know, it's the way it is.
I am fascinated, though, by what is the perception by which people decide that someone is tilting. Is there anything that a person of color can say at all that doesn't lead to that perception that you are favoring?
Yeah, if you're Clarence Thomas, if you go the other direction and you're perceived as being someone who is in the Latino community, if you have somebody who is over the top on immigration enforcement and over the top so that we're sort of seen as house trained, you know, potty trained, that we can be acceptable in that regard. But if you're not acceptable, if you stray off and start to think for yourself, you're going to get this kind of treatment.
Or even if you just describe an aspect of your own experience, does that make you I don't know, Arsalan, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think that Steve King, you know, perfectly represents the wingnut, you know, paradigm of the Republican Party today. You know, there are plenty of, you know, conservative politicians out there who are really only looking out for the interests of, you know, conservative white Christian men in this country. And, you know,
But does that make them wingnuts?
No, not necessarily, but Steve King, with all of his rantings before, one about the electric shock fence, the fact that he claimed that he was racially profiled as a white man in a business suit, which
yes.
I find really laughable. You know, I think that Steve King definitely does qualify for the wingnut wing of the Republican Party. What I'm trying to say is that, you know, when he disingenuously states that President Obama said that white people, you know, are cowards because of, you know, the dealing with race in America, that just shows that, you know, no matter what President Obama does, people are always going
to
hate on him.
Can I just, before we let you go, and just to end on a happier note, I do have to say Happy Father's Day to the dads.
Thank you.
And I'll say Happy Father's Day to the pre-dads out there. I know there are some pre-dads out there, including
pre-dads.
Jimmy, what do you want?
Business card, actually. Pre-dad.
No, get busy.
Ruben, what do you want for Father's Day? Quick.
Just time with my kids. I'm going to get it. Go over to my dad's house as well. Have a barbecue and love on my kids.
All right, Happy Father's Day, Jimmy. What do you want for Father's Day? I'll put a good word
in
for
him. Same thing, ditto, just time with my kids, and, you know, we're gonna go outside, we're going to play soccer as it happens.
All
so
right, okay, see, try not to hate. All right, happy Father's Day to the dads, and
happy Father's
Day, advanced
Dad.
Father's Day, and to the dads of the
Thanks.
Dads. All right, Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book, The Denzel Principle. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from San Diego. Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated. He joined us from New York, our New York bureau. Arsalan Iftikhar was here in our D.C. studios. He's a civil rights attorney, the founder of themuslimguide.com, the legal fellow for the Institute for Social Policy Understanding. He was here in Washington. Thank you all so much.
Jeez.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.